Plan worked out perfectly. Go to the commercial break, and maybe the mayor will show up. And hello there.
Here I am. Apologize for being late.
If you had congestion pricing, you wouldn't have, you wouldn't have that.
That's exactly right, but I can't blame congestion. We had a staff meeting, and one thing led to another, and I had to have another meeting about some problem, which was we had to face this morning. Didn't look at my watch, and I said, oops. That's it.
Stu?
Nobody to blame.
I
love to blame it on Stu. You know, mistakes were made. Let's have a hearing. But no, this one, I screwed up.
Okay, let's jump into it. The party change. You were having fun with the national media?
Look, I am going to be mayor of this city, God willing, till midnight on December 31st, 2009, and then I will go off into the philanthropic and private world again. I've got the greatest job in government. In the meantime, why change?
Because, that was my next question. Yeah, why change?
Because I've got to work more and more, whether it's in Albany or in Washington, with both parties. I have criticized the gridlock that people who say, I've got to vote this way because my party is insisting that I do so we can maintain our majority or gain a majority, depending on which side you're on. I can't question that because it's the party philosophy. And, you know, I've always governed in a nonpartisan way. I think you look at the facts of the particular issues and not whose facts they are or view them in an ideological sense or listen to some party leader telling you have to vote this way whether you like it or not and we're not going to let you go off the reservation or we'll withhold support or something. I've never done that. I've never been a particularly partisan guy. I was a Democrat for many years in the city. There's basically never been a Republican primary. So if you want to vote in primaries, you vote on the Democratic side and then in the general election vote with who you want. The Republicans gave me a chance to get on the ballot, which I could not have running as a Democrat. I happen to think that the Republican Party is broad enough. There are plenty of people in it that I disagree with and plenty of people that I agree with. And I think the same thing can be said on the Democratic side. These tents are very big and they change and depends on geographical issues and individual races. I've tried while I was a Republican to help the Republican Party the extent I could or to help Republicans who I agree with. And I've helped Democrats who I agree with, so I've always done things from the middle. And I just thought it was time to continue that and to change and to do that. And I didn't really want to make an announcement out in California. I was going to wait till I got back to New York, but the press got wind of it. So I didn't really have much choice rather than have them have all these stories.
Do you think that the hullabaloo over this from the point of the press – is any indication that there is a lot more support for Mayor Michael Bloomberg as president of the United States
No.
than maybe you think?
No, I don't. I think there's a lot more support for changing a system that the public thinks is broken or not doing a good job. I think the public doesn't like the focus on these tangential issues like with regard to some of the smaller things and leaving the big things for next generation. And I think that's all it is. It's very flattering that I'm at the moment the poster child for it. That'll come, that'll go a few more days and the stories will go off to picking somebody else. But what's not going to change is that this really is about issues. It's about Social Security and it's about health care and it's about public education and it's about crime and guns on the streets in the hands of criminals. It's about our reputation overseas. It's about immigration. Iraq obviously is one of the things that people find very disturbing no matter where you stand on it. There's a whole bunch of these issues. Energy policy. People have a view that America is the greatest place in the world, and they're fundamentally – Americans are optimistic. Americans always think, as do I, that tomorrow is going to be the best day of their life. At least I hope they do. I think they should. Having said that, there are some very worrisome things, and that is what you see. They say for an independent candidate, it's sort of a none of the above because I haven't heard from anybody who expressed – who is willing to stand up for what they believe. And it's not easy to stand up for what you believe, because if you are explicit about an issue, you lose basically half the people. After two explicit issues, you've got a quarter of the people. After three, an eighth. After four, a 16th. After five, a 32nd. You know, when it's you have a 32nd of the people in your camp, it's pretty lonely out there. And so, you know, elected officials try to avoid taking many of them. That's not fair, because there really are some principled people out there. You know, we've got two candidates from New York. Rudy was a good mayor and certainly had opinions and took positions. Hillary has been a great senator and has opinions and taken them. I have nothing but good things to say about both of them. And around the country, I think there are other candidates in both parties who are good. But and I'm not going to go and pick which ones. And I said I'm going to stay out of the race for president or national races, the same way as I stayed out of the statewide races. But I will continue to support candidates on both sides of the aisle. I've supported Joe Bruno in Albany. His conference has stood there for this city. Some people say, oh, he can't be good because he's a Republican. He can't be this, can't be that. Let me tell you, with the exception of the stadium, everything we've ever asked for this city, both Joe Bruno and Shelley Silver, too, and their conferences have basically been there with us. And incidentally, I talked to both of them and to the governor this morning to say thank you for all the help. They didn't get to where I'd like them all to be. Hopefully they come back and do it. We can come back and talk about that later.
Yeah, I'll talk about that in a minute. Let me follow up on the Washington situation and America's frustration. Is the system broken, or is it the people that are in that system that are broken?
Well, you know, my mother always says the good old days were never the good old days, and we should be we forget the bad things and only remember the good things. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with democracy. It's, as Winston Churchill said, better than all the alternatives. There are some very honest, hardworking, competent, gutsy people out there. I think there is much too much partisanship. Friends of mine who have been on the national scene for a long time say it is more partisan today than it was 10 and 15, 20 years ago. I don't know whether that's true. This weekend I heard a story that I think it was Schwarzenegger that told a story that Hubert Humphrey was dying, and he called a bunch of his friends to say goodbye. And he called Richard Nixon, who at that time was, you know, nobody would talk to. He'd been a disgraced president, resigned under fire. And he said, you know, I want you to be at my funeral and sit in the front row because you were president of the United States and you did some things that I agree with and some things I didn't. And Schwarzenegger used that as an example of nonpartisanship. Gray Davis, who Schwarzenegger beat, introduced Schwarzenegger at this conference. I mean, those were examples of across party lines. Now, in many cases, if you reached across party lines and said something nice about somebody else, they
exactly. The leadership grabs you by the collar and yanks you off and gives you the
what it needs is people to stand up and say, you're not going to tell me what to do. And, you know, I supported Lieberman. I didn't think that – there's a lot of things Joe Lieberman stands for that I don't. But I like the fact that he was willing to stand up and say what he believes. I respect people like that. John McCain's just getting beaten up terribly, even in Arizona, for his pro-immigration stand. He believes, and he's willing to stand up knowing it's going to hurt him very badly. The same thing on the war. I'm not sure I agree with him. But I respect people who stand up and say what they believe, and I think there are a lot of those around. Maybe not enough.
You mentioned that if you take a position, if a politician takes a position, X numbers disappear, the disagree with you, and as you get on
unless it's another theory that if you do all of that, people will say, well, I don't agree with him anything, but at least he's principled and I'm going to vote for him.
That was my question. How would Michael Bloomberg as president avoid doing that?
How would Michael Bloomberg, number one, not going to be president, but how would you avoid?
Avoid the temptation to play to the politics.
Look,
rather than
I am not going to be president, but I, you know, I can give you one example. Last 5.5 years. I mean, I'm not going to have a chance to be president, but I am going to have a chance to be mayor for the next 2.5 years. And smoking ban wasn't popular. Raising property taxes wasn't popular. There are a lot of things, bills I vetoed or positions I took, weren't popular. And yet, even, John, when the ratings were down, you know, favorable at 25%, people, when they asked the question, is he honest and hardworking and trustworthy, you always scored in 75%. The American public's a lot smarter than you think. I think some of these popularity polls are very misleading because they judge, you know, it's fundamentally the issue of the day. But when people step back and say, who do I want as a leader, I think they look into their inner soul and say, I want somebody that's honest and
I think we are desperate for honesty and leadership.
We are, but unfortunately, I think as John McCain is showing, some people, at least in the polls, and who knows whether that works in the election or whether that's representative of the total electorate, but some people still judge people on partisanship issues. And, I don't see, never have, the difference being between Republicans and Democrats, between being the Senate, the House, or Congress and the White House. I think it has to do with people. Individuals are people. I respect on both sides, both places, both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, but not there. And there are plenty of people I don't respect, and no party has a lock on
ethics.
On ethics, on social, any social philosophy, mm-hmm. economic philosophy. God isn't on the side of one party and against the other. There are good people and bad people. There are people that have courage and people that don't. And you can go back in history and look at people and say, wow, this guy or this woman stood up when it was tough. And those are the people that I respect. And I'd like to think when I finish my term as mayor on December 31st, 2009, people say I didn't agree with him on a lot of things, but he was honest and hardworking, cared, tried to do what was right. And on balance, it worked. I mean, you know, you want to have crime down, test scores up, yeah. Parks better, streets cleaner, all that kind of stuff. But it's the fact that you tried and you did it right and attracted good people and kept scandals out. Those are the important things.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on just a second. Let me take a half-hour break. We will be right back. Lots to talk about. Stick around. Right now, more with George Weber. George.
And finally, John, some Kansas firefighters feeling the heat after helping a woman fill her swimming pool. The woman asked several members of Engine Company 17 to fill her husband's new above-ground swimming pool for Father's Day. So the firefighters got the job done in just a few minutes, something that would have taken more than a half a day to do with a garden hose. The crew's in trouble because they were on duty at the time, used equipment from the department, and shot $25 worth of city water into the pool.
Well, there you go. They tried to help out, tried to do a good thing, and ended up behind the
I was going to say, probably broke a lot of laws, but you got to say, you know, come on.
This is like, the kind of story that you would love to have today.
You know, you'd be massacred, it'd be headlines, outrage, shocking, and all the words the press uses. Come on.
It's a city service. Help
hey,
out.
Hey, you know, they helped a woman, and, you know, what are you going to say?
Speaking of firemen, on a sad note, on Daniel Pujic.
I was at Bellevue last night and spent some time with the mother and father of Daniel Pujic, 23 years old, 2 years on the job. Mother's a school teacher in Brooklyn and public schools in the city of New York. Parents, two of the nicest people you've ever wanted to talk to. This is the second son they lost. They had a 2.5-year-old who died. They have two other sons, but one of whom was there, one's upstate and was coming down. You know, it just tears your heart. They'll do a complete investigation, but it looks like it was just plain and simple an accident. The guy was assigned to a truck. Truck is a ladder. Truck's job is to get people out and then vent the fire. Then the engine comes in and puts the water on the fire. That's fundamentally oversimplistic, but that's the ways that that's the division of labor, basically. He was up on the roof with his chainsaw, which they use to cut through roofs to vent the fire, let the smoke out. And, you know, that's a heavy piece of equipment. Who knows whether it contributed or not. But the bottom line is he slipped and fell 4 stories, and you don't survive that. And
the report is now, George, cigarette smoking?
Yeah, careless smoking, I guess.
Yeah, the fire marshal, and they made the determination very quickly. It was an artist studio. I think the artist lived there and was smoking at the window, left the cigarette, maybe tried to put it out, maybe didn't. but at the windowsill, that's what caught fire. The fire was contained in that one apartment pretty much. And, you know, it just, it could have been avoided if there wasn't the fire, but your heart goes out to it. It doesn't look like there was anything else. This is a well-trained, and incidentally, the training that our firefighters get is not only the best in the country, we're expanding it. It used to be 13 weeks in probie school. The current class is 18 weeks, and the next class will be, like, I think it's 23 or thereabouts, and which will be far and away double what it was before. That was one of the things we thought. The more training you can give young people when they come on, the better they'll be able to do their job and the safer they'll be. It's a job, however, that is a risky job. And as you can see here, you know, just another great tragedy. And there was that fire in North Carolina.
It was nine.
Nine firefighters killed. You know, I was talking the other night. I gave a talk and said, there are young men and women overseas fighting and dying to keep us free, and there are young men and women who take dangerous jobs here in the big cities and in the suburbs who fight and put their lives in danger to keep us free. It's, you know, we go about our business, we yell and we scream and we complain and we have a good time, and all that's fine, but there's a cost.
Okay.
Every once in a while, I should think about it.
All right, we'll get right back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg in a second. Real fast, a little business look. Here's Joan Bennett. Joan. WABC. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 77 WABC. John Gambling with you. Good morning, all. Congestion pricing, alive or dead?
I hope alive. The you know, I was disappointed that the Albany couldn't come up with an agreement on everything, including that last night. They've said, or Joe Bruno said, he'll come back on July 16th, which is important because that's the last day we think that we can submit an application
to the federal, government.
Federal government for funds. I will say that Bruno and Silver and Spitzer, all three, you know, they gave us as much of an opportunity to make our case as you could ever hope for. And, you know, we'll continue to make our case. I think this is right for the city. I hope they believe that. And, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, I've got no complaints. I just want to get it done. It is, I think, the right thing for the city. It would generate a lot of revenue, which we desperately need for mass transit. And it would reduce congestion in the city, which we desperately need to help the economy. And it would put fewer cars on the road, not just in the city, but also in Brooklyn and Queens and the Bronx, on Long Island Expressway, on the Westchester roads. Fewer cars coming into the city would benefit people even far away from the city who use those roads to travel on. Fewer cars. Everybody, this is something that everybody benefits. The charge is enough to annoy you a little bit and hopefully dissuade you from driving, but not enough so that if you have to, you can still do it. It generates some monies to help fix mass transit and expand mass transit, not enough to pay all of the things for all the things we want to do, but enough to get us going. It will make a big difference. And, you know, there's a number of things. One of the things that Albany did yesterday, which sort of gets lost in all Michigas going on, they did something great. They passed the law that we need to eliminate the city sales tax on clothing and shoes.
That's gone permanently.
Permanently and for all clothing and all shoes. And that's for, you want to.
That's the city's portion.
The city's portion, that, which is roughly half of the total sales tax. I hope the state will go along, but that's up to them. You want to reduce taxes as much as you can. Nobody likes taxes. They're not good, but we need services, and you've got to pay for them. And leaving things for our kids is not smart thing to do, for our kids to pay for. We want to leave the benefits to our kids. But in the places where you really want to eliminate taxes first, if at all possible, is where people can easily avoid them. And clothing and shoes, you could go across the border and buy elsewhere. The jobs would follow, and when people are there to buy clothes and shoes, they buy other things, so it has a much bigger impact. This really will help people in this city be able to afford clothing when they're starting up the economic ladder, and even for wealthy people, just keep them from going elsewhere. That means more jobs in this city, so everybody's a big beneficiary, and I want to publicly thank the legislature for doing that. We've got plenty of other things we'd like them to do, and hopefully between now and July 16th, when I assume both parts of the legislature will come back. I know.
You said you talked with Silver.
This morning I called Silver and Bruno and Spitzer and thanked them for all of their work. You know, we joked, we commiserated, and these three guys will continue to work full time between now and then.
How about Corzine's objections to the congestion
pricing? I talked to Governor Corzine and explained to John, for New Jersey, people from New Jersey can't drive into the city without paying a toll because there's only three routes or four, I guess, if you went across Staten Island. All of the bridges and tunnels have tolls. Since you offset the tolls against congestion pricing fee, there's no great incentive or disincentive to drive. So in our modeling, we only think that you'd reduce the traffic from New Jersey by a couple of thousand cars out of 65,000 cars. So if those people took mass transit, you wouldn't even notice it on the mass transit. You could argue that you want to do something that dissuades more people from coming in, and that's another thing to a separate issue to talk about. But his fear was that his mass transit would be overwhelmed, and I think I hopefully convinced him that that was not, and I think I promised him we'd be happy to sit down and go over it. But it's not going to make a difference.
You have modeled congestion pricing your plan after London and Singapore. Ken Livingstone yesterday vehemently attacked the American embassy for refusing to pay their bill for London's congestion pricing. Would embassies be required to pay congestion pricing here in New York under your plan?
Why didn't I think about that before, so you'd ask me that? I guess my here's the issue, that the State Departments, not just ours, but all of them, they generally argue that they should not be subject to local laws and taxes because if they are, then you'd be subject in their countries and you'd get into an argument and it'd be better off if everybody.
By the way, the French over in London have refused to pay too.
Right. In this city, we used to have a big problem with people double parking or parking in fire hydrants. Colin Powell, and particularly my sister, believe it or not, deserve the credit for fighting that battle. We now take away license plates, and you'll almost never see a diplomatic car, consular or ambassador level, parked illegally. We have fought with the diplomatic community arguing that while we don't tax your buildings if they're used for diplomatic purposes, if you own property that you're using for economic purposes, you should pay taxes like everybody else.
Which there was a court decision.
And Michael
week, right?
He's probably listening, so I got to give Michael Cardozo credit. He went and argued the case before the Supreme Court, and it had to do with Mongolia and India. And the Supreme Court came back and said, Cardozo won and said, we have the right to go to court. So now we have to go to court. But at least we have the right to do that. To make the case. And I think that's right. When it comes to congestion pricing fees, I've got to think a little bit long and hard. I think I did say that I thought the U.S. should pay them in London. You know, if it was a company that had a legal right to avoid it, I'd say, oh, come on, pay up and be a good corporate citizen.
Well, it can't amount to a whole lot of money.
State Department would say it's not that. It's the principle.
It's the principle that they think everything would fall
after. Right, it's easy for you and I to talk about. The State Department has to have a bigger view around the world, and we're very parochial and that sort of thing. But it's another one of those.
All right, we got a bunch of folks who want to ask some questions. 1-800-848-WABC. Final break. Come back. It will be you at 77 WABC. 77 WABC. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show, Friday edition. It's your turn. 1-800-848-WABC. Going to start with Jack in Brooklyn. Jack, you've got the mayor's ear. Go ahead.
Hi, Mayor.
Hi.
The congestion pricing is basically designed to keep cars out of Manhattan during peak hours. Now, my idea was that if you put a tariff on parking garages in the city, so people who come in from the suburbs who have access to public transportation would have to pay, let's say, an extra $10 a day to enter a parking garage in Manhattan between, let's say, 6 a.m. and 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. So it would people would have to pay an extra $50 a week to drive into the city, as opposed to putting an extra fee on trucks that would just pass that price on to the consumers anyway.
Right. Jack, I think we already do exactly what you suggest, and it does limit traffic, you'd think, to some extent. I think there's an 18.5% or thereabouts tax on
it's
parking
steep,
garages.
I don't know what it is.
You know, the garages, no matter how much they raise their prices, doesn't seem to dissuade enough people because they're still full. I think most garages are full when you look for a space.
People argue the same thing will happen with congestion pricing, that people will still pay the money.
At the margin, but you've got a much bigger base to draw from. A lot of people park on the streets, and a tax on parking garages wouldn't give them a disincentive to drive and an incentive to go to mass transit. None of these things stand alone. Tolls on bridges, you can argue, do that. There are ways around the tolls. That's one of the things that creates all this pollution in the Bronx and in Brooklyn, Queens. People drive way out of their ways to avoid a toll. With congestion pricing, there'd be less incentive to do that, or almost none. But that does, this, in theory, keep the number of cars one of the things that keeps it down. Tolls, parking, when you have parking meters as opposed to
created cost. Free.
Yeah, sure. So, we're doing some of that.
All right, Jack, thanks a lot. 1-800-848-WABC. Mickey in Brooklyn, you've got the mayor. Go.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Mayor Bloomberg. It's a pleasure to speak with you. Mr. Bloomberg, I was interested in a opportunity to probably change the focus on the logo of New York City in terms of teaching people to treat one another the way they want to be treated. And I would suggest if you were to go as far as to use it on a broader scale. I tried it in my community in Red Hook, and it's worked a little bit. But now, like I said, on a broader scale, that's such as putting it on trains and buses and cabs and on billboards, which will reduce your road rage out here with all the traffic that we have in the city. And this focus itself could be actually used in schools to teach the kids at a younger age to treat one another the way they wanted to be treated.
Mickey, well, that's the way my mother always used to
I was going to say, you
Mom
know,
used
if
you, to tell me that
if you want a standard to live by, I don't know if it's if a philosopher would say that it's selfish, but it is. It certainly gives
works.
You. It works, sure. I mean, people want respect and recognition. And they don't necessarily, I think, they don't have to agree with you, but if you give them the courtesy of respect and recognition, which is what you and I both want, and that's true no matter who you are or what you do for a living, and you can be a famous radio talk host with a great lineage where everybody listens. I don't know anybody like that, but let's assume there was somebody like that. If his name was John or something, would like to be treated that way, and I trust will treat
right.
your guests.
Unfortunately, that there's too many in the population that don't see it that way. Good idea,
right.
Mickey. Let's see here. Let's go to Renee in the Bronx. Renee, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your question, real fast?
I have a problem with the speeders on my block, and we live on a school block, and it's really difficult to get a speed hump put in. And I was wondering if there's any way to get it in quicker.
Well, if you stay on the line, we'll get the... I'll have somebody call you. I don't know what the procedures are, and I can't pull strings and jump you to the head of any line if you're on the line. But, Renee, one of the things that I had thought speed bumps were good when I came into office, and then I listened to both sides of the argument, speed bumps do slow some people down. But then at night when people don't slow down and go roaring over them and you hear a thump.
Make a lot of noise.
We have probably had as many requests to take speed bumps out as to have put speed bumps in. They don't always work, and I don't know what the rules are into whether they put them right around schools or not.
You've got built-in speed bumps, though, here in the city. They're called potholes.
We'd have fewer potholes. This year, actually, there's a lot fewer potholes because it was a mild winter. We didn't plow very much. And the plows are the things that really rip up the streets. But we're trying to address the potholes. We have a new commissioner for the Department of Transportation, Janet Sedek Khan. She is with the MTA and the governor's office, actually are going down to D.C. on Monday to try to work with the Department of Transportation and explain how congestion pricing would work if we're lucky enough to get it, but we have to start going through that process now.
What's the over-under on congestion pricing real fast?
My hope is I'm always optimistic. Always optimistic.
There you go again, ladies and gentlemen. Will he be president? No, I don't think so, but anyway. Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to see you. We will see you next Friday. Stick around. Chris Wallace.